Hello and welcome to the Gilmore Ball Z bonus episodes, where, thanks to your generous contributions to the Gohan and Roy Book Club Fund, we watch Dragon Ball Z movie number 8, Broly, the Legendary Super Saiyan. I'm Grant.
I'm Paige.
And, so this happened.
Yeah, I liked how you even paused on, because of your generous donations, we were watching, like, generous to who? Generous to the children, I guess. Not generous to me.
For anybody who wants to nitpick, we watched whatever uncut, I think it's whatever newest version exists that you can rent on whatever it is, Apple TV, you can rent from for $4. And so it did have all of the original soundtrack and score. It appeared to be a remastered version of the movie.
As opposed to the other version that we could find, which was someone's jank archive.org bootleg. So jank that it legit came off a VHS with the little VHS symbol in the corner. And all the ads beforehand. So
yeah,
if you wanted to know what Funimation was selling to children then, apparently it was Yu Yu Hakusho, Dragon Ball GT, The Buu Saga. Timely. And
Blue Gender.
Yeah. Which not kids the same, classic Blue Gender.
Yeah, not the same target audience as the target audience of Dragon Ball Z in the 90s. But yes, if you look, you can find, I was trying to find where we could rent it from or if any place had it streaming. And the Apple TV was the only legit place I could find. And then the questionably legit place I found was there is an archive.
Not legit.
No.
It was so not legit. But lovingly made, it still had the FBI warning beforehand telling me it wasn't legit.
Yeah, anyway. So that's the version of the movie that we watched. But I believe it is still the same original voice acting because Stephanie Nadolny is still Gohan as opposed to Colleen Klinkenbeard. So I don't think they've done like a Kai redub of this movie. So, Paige, give us the rundown, or at least get us started on what happened in Broly the Legendary Super Saiyan.
Yeah, I guess. sure. So we're told when the movie starts that King Kai is very disturbed because the South Galaxy, as you'll remember, King Kai is the Kai of the North Galaxy. Obviously, these North, South, East, and West are oriented based on magnets?
Something.
Anyway, this orientation makes no sense, Grant. What's up and down in space? There's no pole. Anyway.
Yeah, there's a scene later where Goku, like, it's supposed to be a laugh line where King Kai's like, go to the South Galaxy and find him. And Goku's like, wait, which way is south again? He's like, Goku's dumb. It's like, no, that's a reasonable
question. That's a legit
question. That's a very reasonable question.
Anyway, as we're making jokes about the South Galaxy, it's been destroyed. Everyone in it is dead. That's where we start. Then we cut to a couple fun scenes. One is Chi-Chi's being a horrible nag by asking her husband to wear a suit and pay attention when she tries to get her kid into a good school.
Mm-hmm.
What a nag.
And like, even the other men in the room are like, gee, you better stay out of the way of this lady.
Yeah, she was trying to get Goku to remember to not say, I have fun fighting people in his kid's application to college. Baby college.
I think just a private school.
Yeah.
But I gotta say, yes, the way that Chi-Chi's portrayed as a horrible nag in that scene is problematic for all the reasons it always is when Chi-Chi's just portrayed as a horrible nag.
But also, Goku won the World Martial Arts Tournament.
Yeah, you'd think that Chi-Chi would be smart enough to know, oh, we'll spin, she could spin it into the fact that, and it's not wrong that Goku has instilled in their son
discipline
and hard work and, you know, a love of bettering himself. And
yep,
those are all things that honestly are values that, I mean, we mostly got them from Piccolo, but we can spin it that he got them from Goku. Like, you can spin Goku as he is into being a good father and role model to Gohan.
No, Chi-Chi's just a short-sighted nag because she won't let Goku go to the party.
The nondescript party
that's
happening.
There's a nondescript party that's happening where, I mean, honestly, Chi-Chi's probably had this meeting on her calendar, color coordinated for months. And then Goku set up a party with his friends. They asked, are you free this date? We're trying to find a day for our party. And he was like, yes.
Sure.
Absolutely. Because that's how Goku rolls. And now he's just sad that he can't go to his party and he has to go to this thing for his kid. And it's education.
Education.
Meanwhile, at the party, no one's having a good time because Krillin's singing karaoke.
And he sings karaoke for a really long time. Like, Paige is about to explain what's happening in the rest of the scene. And for the entire, you need to know, for the entirety of the rest of this scene, Krillin is singing bad karaoke in the background.
I don't know if I am, because not much is happening. I mean, I'll get into it in a second. But I just want to say already how low every woman in the Dragon Ball universe's standards are set. Because we've got Chi-Chi just trying to get her husband to wear a suit for 2 hours to better his child's education that he supposedly kind of cares about. And he won't even do that to remember that he has fake hobbies that Chi-Chi wants him to fake have. Like, saying he likes sports isn't that far off, honestly.
No.
Fighting is a sport.
He enjoys physical competition.
He does. Meanwhile, we've got Vegeta, who's just a horrible father of the year, because always... But then also we've got Krillin's karaoke where he's singing about how he wants to be someone's puppy and carry them the newspaper.
To be fair, that is basically what Krillin wants at this point in time.
That is what Krillin wants in this point in time, but it reminds me of that boy on Terrace House. Like, we watched one episode of Terrace House, you know, I might watch more, but there's this episode, this is a Japanese show, six people living in a house together, reality show, that kind of thing.
It's Big Brother, but Japanese.
And much nicer because it's Japanese Big Brother. But there's this guy who's like 19, and he's like, I want to be a puppy and I want a woman to take care of me. That's basically what Krillin's saying here. This is what the women of Dragon Ball have their best shot at here.
To be fair, I'm pretty sure 18 would just want a guy to be her puppy and she can take care of him.
I don't know. 18 seems like she has a little too much self-respect to deal with that. She'd be like, no, you're giving nothing to me. I can have sex with anyone. Let's just say it like... If 18 wants physical affection, she can get it.
Mm-hmm.
If she wants someone to be impressed with her, she can get it.
Yeah.
If she's disrespected, she can dropkick them to the curb and they'll go to the moon. What is she getting from Krillin anyway? Who knows? Moving on. I mean, yes, he was the first person to not see her as a monster, but at this point, Krillin is not a good option.
This is also before he's had all that development.
It is before he's
kind
had
all... Kind of, maybe. We'll talk about the timeline of this movie in a minute.
Oh, please. But as this is happening, out of nowhere, some guy whose name is Paragus comes in. Now, this is not an insult to anyone named Paragus. I'm going to call him Perseus and Pegasus for the rest of this episode. I'm just letting you know now. Because I don't care about anything that happened in this movie. So... Perseus comes in and he tells Vegeta, I love you, King Vegeta, and I loved your dad, King Vegeta, and I loved your planet, Vegeta. So because Vegeta was destroyed and you were named after your father, I've named this planet after you, New Vegeta. So Vegeta was named for his father, who was named after a planet, and now there's a planet named after Vegeta, who was named after his father, who was named after a planet.
I mean, Vegeta was named after his father, who was named after his father, who was named after his father, who was named after the planet.
Excuse me.
And the planet was actually probably named after him. Actually, yeah, the planet was named after him.
Okay.
Because the Saiyans originally came from planet Salada, which was destroyed, and so planet Vegeta was their new homeworld after the fact.
Because they could only keep one vegetable from the salad.
Yeah, so the first King Vegeta established. And then planet Vegeta was destroyed, so the Saiyans just have a bad track record with planets.
Yeah, but I'm just saying that Vegeta was eventually, like, at some point named...
I understand what you're saying, yes.
Yes, so New Vegeta, named after Vegeta, not to be confused with Vegeta, named after Vegeta, has been established by...
It is also worth noting that this Paragus gentleman is a Saiyan.
He's a Saiyan.
And he has an army of, theoretically, other Saiyans
maybe
with him?
It's hard to tell. They're always in masks. Yes, so this guy comes down, he says, hey, I'm a Saiyan... My kid's a Saiyan. We're all Saiyans. We want to make a new Saiyan planet because we love you, King Vegeta. Come to our planet. We have found the legendary Super Saiyan, the one who lived 1,000 years ago. More on that later. And we want you to rule our planet if you can beat the legendary Super Saiyan. Vegeta says, awesome, because Vegeta... no reason to say no.
Yeah, like, this is exactly what Vegito wants at this point in his character arc.
To be fair, at this point, though, you could have also told him, hey, we're going to go over there and we're just going to stab you repeatedly, but you don't have to listen to Krillin anymore. That's a yes. But he takes it. He goes, a lot of the people get swept up accidentally, including Roshi, Gohan, and Oolong. For some reason, Roshi and Oolong are the side characters in this movie. They don't really come up that often.
They just show up occasionally and are wacky in really tonally inappropriate ways.
Yeah. So they come along. They go to this new planet, Vegeta. It looks kind of nice, but obviously the main draw is the Super Saiyan. Meanwhile, Goku is in his student interview thingy and gets a call from King Kai on the headphone. And answers it in the middle of meetings because Goku has not learned how to establish boundaries. Like, this is an important thing that he's taking on, but it would have been just as relevant 2 hours later. And he and King Kai need to establish some boundaries when his son's well-being is concerned.
Yeah, and I mean, it'd be one thing if King Kai had opened with, Goku, Goku, the universe is in grave danger, I need you now.
No.
But he just opens with, hey, Goku, are you? Then he goes, hey, King Kai! So, like... Yeah, like, it is a clear case of boundaries. It's not even, like, Chi-Chi isn't understanding that something urgent is happening. It wasn't the bat phone. It was just King Kai saying, hey.
Yeah. Like, just, Goku, put your phone on silent for a second. And he calls him and says, hey, Legendary Super Saiyan is in the South. Please go and deal with it. So he instant transmissions out of the meeting. No explanation, really. Instant transmissions over to the South Galaxy where the energy is. King Kai can't tell him where the legendary Super Saiyan is, even though Goku points out that he knows everything. And he's like, well, depends on how I'm feeling, which really translates to somebody tried to call the writers out and it didn't work. So he goes there and it's not there. And then he feels the energy is maybe coming from this new Vegeta. So everybody, which is currently Vegeta, Goku, Gohan, Oolong, and Roshi, and Krillin are on...
And Trunks.
And Trunks. And that's important. And Trunks are on new Vegeta. Trunks went after his dad because he was like, Dad, you're being an idiot. So, and this is adult Trunks, not baby Trunks.
Yeah, I did like Bulma holding baby Trunks, watching the ship take off, and then a future Trunks just runs by and goes, I'll be back, Mom. I'm going to go bring Dad back. And just flies away. And she goes, good luck, son. Like, they've fallen into this pattern.
So, Paragus offers Vegeta a new Vegeta. Meanwhile, because this is Saiyanville, bad cracks are beginning to show. Paragus has a son named Broly who shows up. He's twiggish by their standards, which means he is buffer than anyone.
Super fucking ripped, like, but just not as ripped as Goku.
No, he's ripper than Goku. He's ripped. He is crazy ripped. Meanwhile, all the Saiyans have this weird quasi-Egyptian look going on that definitely wasn't a thing on Vegeta when we last saw the planet in Bardock. I say quasi-Egyptian, but really what I mean here is Yu-Gi-Oh-ish.
Broly in particular, yeah, he's got that weird chest piece and his
it's
control.
It's not just him, though. Like, a few of them had this, like, same motif going on, where it's, like, a lot of gold in big chest plate pieces.
It is anime Egyptian, which is to say, it is Yu-Gi-Oh-ish.
Yeah, so, this is happening. Broly is there, he's super buff, and they emphasize that he's a twig, and they're not going to pay attention to him. But we find out that Paragus is maybe not all that he seems. He's evil laughing all over the place. There are slaves doing slave labor on the planet who came from somewhere else and were brought there by Paragus, which admittedly is par for the course for Saiyans. They're pretty evil.
Mm-hmm.
But he's evil laughing and he's looking for this comet that's going to attack the planet. I'm not going to keep the suspense here because I don't care. Really, what we find out is that Paragus hates Vegeta. Vegeta, meaning Vegeta's father, Vegeta, tried to kill Broly, and because when Broly was a baby, his power was at 10,000, even when he was a baby.
Which is over 9,000.
It is over 9,000. We also learned that when Broly was a baby, he was placed next to Kakarot, Goku, in the little, like, fake wombs, NICU thing.
I think the word you're looking for is the nursery.
It doesn't look warm.
Exactly. It's a Saiyan nursery.
Broly was put next to Goku. Goku cried a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And now Broly hates him more than anything. Before, like, for a good portion of the movie, all that Broly says is Kakarot. Like a weird goblin. Because he remembers that he cried when he was a baby. But Perseus's whole deal is hating Vegeta because he hates Vegeta. And now that Vegeta died, he just has to transfer all of his hatred onto Vegeta.
Mm-hmm.
If that's confusing, I'm sorry. It's not my fault. Vegeta's father wanted to kill Broly. Perseus wanted to stop it, so he sent Perseus and Broly away to die on some planet. Maybe. It's kind of unclear. That was the same day that planet Vegeta was destroyed, destroying Vegeta, but not Vegeta. So now that Vegeta is dead, Perseus has to take his vengeance out on Vegeta. He is going to do this by having a comet hit this planet.
What's the planet called again?
New Vegeta. It's so good.
Also, thank you for not specifying that it was Frieza that destroyed the planet, just to make sure you don't break the Vegeta streak.
It's not important here. That's the thing. Frieza doesn't matter.
No. So to break that down for those of you who might be lost in the sea of Vegetas.
Perseus hates Vegeta and has trapped him, like he brought him here as bait for a trap, and he's going to destroy the planet with a comet that's on course to hit this planet in a matter of hours.
Yes. And King Vegeta, so Vegeta's father, was afraid of Broly, so he had both Paragus and Broly killed, or tried to have them both killed, and like did the whole Sparta thing of just sort of throwing them in a ditch to die, but that just happened, coincidentally happened, to be the same day Frieza destroyed the planet, but little baby Broly was able to project an energy field to protect the two of them from the planet's destruction, and I guess they just floated on through space until they hit another habitable planet, and that's where we're at.
And Broly is incredibly powerful. That power from when he was a baby continued, and not only was he powerful, but shocker, even with Paragus's loving abuse, he grew up to be a not good person.
What passes for loving parenthood in Saiyan culture?
Yeah, so abuse. And so he built Broly a control collar, basically. And this is a lot of stuff that's still in the more recent Broly, which is a reboot of this movie. We didn't clarify that earlier.
Yeah.
Basically, he's got this collar. He's going to keep his son under control. And, you know, that would unlock all sorts of interesting and important conversations about what we need to do to keep children who are too powerful, too young, safe, and other people safe from them. But that's not the discussion we're having here, because Pegasus is using this shock collar to take over planets and take over the world with his son.
So Pegasus is using some very anime Egyptian style items in order to try to take control of the world.
Yeah, this is just Yu-Gi-Oh.
This movie's just Yu-Gi-Oh.
It's also just other things. I'll get to that more later. So the problem is that Broly, as he gets older, is not responding to the shock collar. Like, he's overpowering it, and there's really nothing that can be done about it. Pegasus is ignoring the warnings, but it's still happening. So that night when everyone goes to bed to wake up on the beautiful new Vegeta looking for this legendary Super Saiyan, Broly comes and attacks Goku during the night.
Yeah, because he sees Goku earlier in the day, and that
turns on his...
It just triggers that rage in the back of his head.
So all he can say is Kakarot, and all he can strangle is Kakarot. But Perseus wakes up and stops him from doing that. Goku goes through this whole speech that's, like, on the ship. It's really weird. After this has all been slowed down and Broly's been pulled off, Vegeta's about to leave to go find the Super Saiyan. Goku's in the capsule core ship and is just talking for, like, a minute about breakfast. Like, breakfast, breakfast, breakfast. I want breakfast. My stomach is rumbling because breakfast. Vegeta. Broly is the legendary Super Saiyan. Breakfast. And it's just like, I don't know what happened here.
Throughout this whole movie, there are two Gokus, and they just keep flip-flopping on, because there's like, fun, wacky, I like to eat a lot, my hobby is reading Goku, and then suddenly he'll flip to like, kind of the more, American dub version of Goku that's a little more stern and a little more serious. And so he keeps flip-flopping between, like, give me more food, I'm so hungry, ha ha ha, what's going on, hey all, it's me, Goku, and, you know, I am the thing that answers the cry of all hurt, all wounded innocence in the darkness.
But this scene, it was the most clear, because, like, it switched on a dime for no apparent stimulus. He's just like, breakfast, Vegeta! But at this point, that just kind of breaks loose all hell. Paragus just gives his whole evil villain speech about, this is what I'm doing now, and my son is going to destroy you here and now. Broly loses all control and really, really, really wants to kill Goku, so that's what he's doing now. He goes Super Saiyan. His power is very strong. They try to fight him and fail. And then at some point, his power gets stronger for no good apparent reason.
It's just the depths of his power, he just keeps getting stronger and stronger.
Sure.
The vibe that you're kind of supposed to take away from it is he's basically like DBZ Hulk.
Yeah.
Where he just keeps getting stronger the angrier he gets.
That's not well, like, translated, though. Like, it doesn't come across to the audience. Other things that don't come across to the audience and seem to happen for no reason. Piccolo shows up. They ask Piccolo, why did you show up? And he was like, I heard you. Okay, cool. So he's just been flying here this whole time. And he sensed Broly's power level all the way from the watchtower.
Yeah, he both could hear Goku and King Kai's conversation. So I guess he can hear through the vacuum of space.
He says he can hear everything in the universe.
He can hear his ears are just that good. He can hear everything in the universe.
Another Piccolo superpower that shows up once and then is completely forgotten.
Yeah, but I have to say, it was silly. It came out of nowhere. It was just an excuse to get Piccolo into this movie. But I fucking love Piccolo's entrance in this movie.
Well, it's especially good because Broly has figured out that even though Goku is not a good father, he's a better father than Perseus, and he actually cares about his kids, so attacking Gohan is a way to get to Goku. And so even when he's taken all the fighters down, he's zeroing in on Gohan and is about to hit him with a giant energy blast, which gets deflected out of nowhere, and here, you know, cape flapping in the breeze is Piccolo.
Well, I don't know if you noticed, but I love the soundtrack in that moment.
Mm.
Because it goes full spaghetti western.
Yeah.
Like, it goes into a full good and the bad and the ugly kind of spaghetti western-ish, the hero has arrived, little score, and slowly pans up, and there's Piccolo standing on top of just, like, a spire on top of a building.
It was the best moment in this movie.
It was the best, yeah, like, Piccolo. The DBZ movies have this weird thing where they always give Piccolo the most badass entrance, and then he just doesn't do anything.
Yeah, he does nothing. I mean, what he does here is he brought Senzu Bean so he can top everyone off to lose this fight again. At this point, Vegeta has given up. Broly's power is maximum?
His power is maximum.
What does that even mean? It means nothing. It means absolutely nothing. I can go into that more if you want, but really, all it is like, every time they tell me someone's power is infinite or maximum or whatever, it doesn't actually mean anything. Okay, sure. Cell's power was infinite. The android's energy was infinite. Broly's power is maximum. Cool. Great. Cut me to the part where the heroes win. But at this point, Vegeta takes a cue from my cat at the vet and just rolls over and dies. Like, my cat doesn't literally die at the vet, but every time she's in the vet, or I, like, the one time I had to give her a bath, she just looked at us and was like, this is what's happening now. They talk about fight, flight, or freeze being the three reactions, but this is just, like, give yourself up for dead, because what's the point anymore?
Yeah, Vegeta's like, we can't win. It's over. I'm done. Which is a very un-Vegeta thing.
Yeah, and it just kind of comes out of nowhere and then goes away. Now, this is the point, roughly, where this turns from being Yu-Gi-Oh! And turns into being Jon Favreau's Christmas classic Elf.
Okay, yeah, I see where you're going.
Really, like, the best way to spread Christmas cheer is singing loud for all to hear, and by that I mean giving your life energy to Goku. Goku keeps fighting while asking all of his friends for life energy, and they're all giving their life energy, except James Caan, who's played here by Vegeta. who won't sing for Santa and give up his life energy to Goku, so Goku can't win and is getting beat into the ground by Broly, whose power is ultimate and is the legendary Super Saiyan.
His power is maximum.
Sorry, his power is maximum and he's the legendary Super Saiyan. More on that in a second.
Yeah, well, so just a quick, so for people who don't get the joke, there's a meme in the Dragon Ball Z fandom that's just Broly, his power is maximum, and that's just...
Is there more to the joke?
That's just the joke, is that his power is maximum, but the origin
that's
of it...
That's hilarious, boys.
The origin of it, there's a bit more to it. The origin of it is a newspaper in Fresno, California.
What, Fresno?
Just had... The only time that phrase has ever been uttered.
Been uttered by drunk Fresno State students.
Just did you know, a thing where it was they took art submissions from kids, and you take your picture, and it was a question, you know, ask a question about the kids, and then the kids draw a picture with their answer, and that's the thing. And so they got a response from a Marcus Johnson, 8 years old, with a picture of Broly. I'll send this to you in a minute.
Yeah.
A little crayon drawing of Broly, and Marcus's answer was, Broly from Dragon Ball Z, his power is maximum. And so this turned into a meme and got passed around, because this was back in the bad old internet days of motivational poster memes.
Gotcha.
So it's Broly in the big letters, and then just his power is maximum, with the picture being Broly, his power is maximum. And so the joke became that his power is maximum, and there's Broly, we can get into it a little bit more when we talk more about the movie, but Broly for a long time was kind of a polarizing character in the Dragon Ball Z fandom, because this movie came out,
people liked him?
Well, because, okay, if you are a hopped up 8-year old who just like loves to punch shit and loves Dragon Ball Z, this movie comes along and there's this dude who is huge, roided out Hulk Super Saiyan who can take on Goku, Gohan, Trunks, Piccolo, and Vegeta all at the same time.
I don't
no
question
sweat.
That.
Like,
but usually when you get fandom wars, like when little kids are arguing over this stuff, it's little kids arguing over this stuff, and that's adorable. When you get to divisions in the fandom, it is usually happening to adults.
Yes. Well, that's the split. Is the split is the people saying, like, yeah, okay, he's silly, but he was my favorite when I was a kid. Because,
oh, that's legit.
Look, he's really badass. Like, yes, his backstory's a little silly, but he's really badass. He's this big, buff-ass dude who can take on 5 people at once. He's just a rage monster who can destroy everything. And the thing is, you say he just goes Kakarot, Kakarot in this movie. Later movies, he really does that. In this, he does have a personality.
In this movie, it switches on a dime.
Yeah.
For the first half of the movie, he's dead inside, partially because of the shock collar and some interesting things that are explored in the new Broly movie in much more interesting ways.
Yeah.
Where it actually dives into the emotional ramifications of your father having a collar on you your entire life and using you to his ends. But in this movie, weirdly, it's the reverse Hulk, where... when the Hulk is the Hulk, he can only basically say Hulk smash, and he's not as eloquent as Bruce Banner.
Right, but yeah, when Broly just lets it all out, he kind of gets his mind back.
He starts using full sentences. He is the reverse Hulk in that he becomes smarter when he goes full Rage-roid.
Yeah.
It's really weird.
But there's people who are like... yes, he's a silly character, but I like the idea of him.
Okay.
And then the flip side is, the other side of it is just, his power is maximum. Like, it's just dumb. Like, his power is maximum kind of sums up why anybody liked him in the first place. And so that's the discourse that goes on around Broly until this new movie came out and actually turned him into a complex and interesting character.
You know, neither one of them is wrong. So, sorry, to go back, Vegeta is James Caan.
Yes.
He starts singing loud for all to hear. He lends his power to Goku. Goku is able to destroy Broly in a fiery explosion. To paraphrase Avatar The Last Airbender, did Broly die? You know, it's really unclear.
Mm-hmm.
The planet...
I mean, there's 2 more movies, so...
Yeah, exactly. But when people watch this movie, they didn't know that.
Yeah.
The planet is destroyed when the comet collides with the planet in a, once again, Dragon Ball-ish timeline that makes no sense. Because it goes from a few hours to right now.
Yeah, with Broly was pummeling all of them for multiple hours on end.
Sure. I mean, why not? He has a big bone to pick. The planet has exploded. It seems like everyone is dead, but don't worry, guys. We somehow pulled out a capsule core capsule, turned it into a spaceship, got all the good guys and the slave species, like the species that had been enslaved, and Roshi and Krillin. Everybody's on the spaceship and everything's fine. Happy ending. We all go back to Earth.
Well, we do get a shot of Roshi and Krillin and Oolong, and like all of the slave people flying away in the capsule. And Roshi has a throwaway line of like, "Sure is a good thing Piccolo gave us this ship that he used."
Right.
So there, we see them fleeing during the battle in the capsule that presumably Piccolo took to get here.
But how everyone else gets into it?
Instant transmission.
Can Goku instant transmission multiple people?
He can bring people with him, because that's how he brought Dende to the Watchtower to become the new Kami.
Then why doesn't he do that more often?
I mean, he does it when it's applicable,
I guess. But you'd think that, like, the solution here would be to pummel him and Broly until the last second and then go to the capsule. Like, they just need to run out the clock.
Yeah.
Broly claims that he can't be destroyed when the planet explodes, but he doesn't know that. We know that because at one point Paragus tries to escape without Broly, and Broly does not like that.
And he crushes Paragus inside his little Saiyan pod.
Yeah, he crushes his father. It's very edible.
It's pretty dope.
So yeah, then we jump back to Gohan not being allowed into private school because his dad is bad at being a father. That's this movie.
Yeah, it ends really abruptly.
Hello. I think you know how I felt about this.
Yeah.
This has been my least favorite viewing experience, I think. It's longer than History of Trunks, which was the most disappointing, because I had the highest hopes for that one that failed. And I enjoyed hating Evolution.
Evolution was fun bad.
This was just...
See, I don't know. I don't know if I would say Evolution was fun bad.
It was fun bad for me. And I think this was because I was kind of in a bad mood when we started watching it, because we had some frustration getting this started. But, like, it just felt like it kept going. Evolution was really bad, and I hated it, but I kind of had a feeling of how long I was going to be in this situation.
Broly has no arc.
Broly has no arc. I mean, it's Dragon Ball.
It's just a bunch of scenes happening.
And I heard about a study. I can probably find it and link it. I know Alan Mowers has it, where people on a flight, when it was 3 hours long, were more anxious to get out and smoke at the end of a 3-hour flight than they were 3 hours into a 6-hour flight, because they knew how long it would be before they were able to smoke.
Mm-hmm.
And so the point of the study was probably something like, you know, your urges to smoke are just as much situational as they are actual chemical. But here it kind of applies, because it was easier to watch Evolution because I had some idea of where I was in a movie's traditional arc. If anything, that movie is too traditional in some ways. While Broly, it's like, is this the beginning? Is this the end? I know they haven't fought yet, so it's not the end. But how long is this fight going to last? How long are we going to be on this planet?
I especially like when Goku gets that last burst of energy from Vegeta and just really, really just powers up. And then he says, "Now the real fight's just beginning." And like, I was like, oh god, are they going to fight for another 10 minutes? And then Goku takes Broly out with one punch.
Yeah. Well, and it's also just frustrating how many times this movie, I mean, obviously people weren't putting their best work behind it. This was a movie that definitely suffered from, it's for kids, we don't have to think about it. If we put a lampshade on it, it's fine. The number of times that actually in the, like, script of the movie, they tell us that what they're telling us doesn't make sense, was super high. And it still didn't encompass all of the things that happened for no good reason. I wrote somehow or for some reason more on these notes than I have for anything else we've covered.
The weird thing is, yes, you're right, that a lot of it was just, we're making this for kids, whatever, it's Dragon Ball Z, it's a cash cow, we can just churn it out. But there was somebody working rather high up in this movie who was convinced that they could turn it into art.
Yes.
And the reason I say that, you might be thinking the same thing I am, there were a handful of shots,
mm-hmm.
like right at the very beginning, and a couple times throughout the movie, the whole thing goes watercolory.
Yes.
In a weird artsy way. But there were other things. There was like, at one point early on in the big final brawl with Broly, he throws an energy blast out and it lands in one of the slave camps and it blows up. And then they show this like almost abstract, arty, colorful, like oil painty shots of just like the slave race screaming in pain as they're destroyed.
Which is horrifying.
Yeah, and it's like this supposed to be this moment of like, oh, the humanity.
But it's in the middle of a movie where like Roshi is talking about boobies and making out with Oolong in his sleep.
Yeah, and like it's just a moment that's there and it passes. And then there's another moment later that I remember you gave me a weird look when it happened, where it's again in the middle of that big final battle, and it's just Goku's 1v1ing with Broly at one point, and he's pummeling him, and then we get just this shot of Goku in like kind of weird colors. It was like it's kind of like in JoJo, when they go into a stand battle, sometimes everything just goes into a weird color palette. Did this mm-hmm. weird color palette shift.
Yeah.
And then suddenly, like, there was a glint of a reflection that made it clear we were actually looking at Goku's reflection in a window pane.
Mm-hmm.
And the glass shattered.
And then
it cuts to Gohan. He's like, Dad!
Well, it cuts to, I want to say, Vegeta first.
It might have.
It shows that same shattering. Like, the shattering effect almost carries over to Vegeta. It's really, that's why I gave you the weird look. I mean, it was partially just because of the weird reflection aspect, but also because it carries through, like, it felt like a reflection of his emotional state, but then it carried through to Vegetism. I don't know what was happening.
See,
there.
In an artsier, like, in an artsier film, I would have taken that shot to mean that Broly just killed Goku.
Yeah.
Like, that's why I was like, no, that definitely doesn't happen in this movie, but that's definitely what I would have taken away from it, watching it.
Well, and even just the entrance of Piccolo, as you were talking about it, it is put together with thought and care.
Yes.
But it's like there were talented people working on a movie they weren't allowed to care about.
Yeah.
And that's really hard. It just, I don't know, the humor doesn't work, the action doesn't work, the character work doesn't work.
See, I'm going to say the action worked for me.
Okay.
Just from a pure visceral level, the big final brawl with Broly was exciting to watch.
See,
the destruction, the collateral damage of the city was cool, and I think that one thing that you have frequently said is a problem with Dragon Ball, and in general I agree, at least with Z, is that so much of the time the fighting doesn't actually show us anything about the characters.
Okay.
And this movie had a little bit of that. Not a lot, but it had a little bit of it. In particular, you mentioned that Broly realizes that the way to get to Goku is to go after Gohan.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason that's clear and actually is kind of a nice through line in that, it's what passes for a through line in that fight, is that multiple times, especially early on in the fight, Goku is constantly jumping in the way of attacks for Gohan.
Yeah.
Prioritizing getting Gohan out of harm's way. And I think that it both is refreshing to see a Goku who is more externally demonstrative about how much he cares about his son, but it also demonstrates just how powerful Broly is, that usually this is Gohan goes Super Saiyan in this movie. So this is Gohan after coming out of the time chamber. So this is a Goku who is convinced that his son can defeat Cell.
Yeah.
But still sees Broly and thinks, "Oh shit, my son can't handle this. He needs to get out of here."
Yeah.
And then another moment that was really nice, and it's just a blink and you miss it thing, but I really, really liked, is there's a bit, again, early on in that fight where it's like, Goku, it's just after Piccolo shows up. And so Goku rushes up to Broly, and he's trying to hit Broly, and Broly's dodging him, and he's just doing like the Dragon Ball thing where he just moves his head.
Yeah.
And then Piccolo comes up, and Piccolo's attacking him, so Goku and Piccolo are both attacking Broly from both sides.
Mm.
And they're perfectly coordinated, and Broly's just dodging all their shit, right? And then Broly, like, grabs Goku and knocks Piccolo out with Goku or whatever.
Yeah.
And then we cut to, he turns to the side, and you just hear, like, a, "Take this!" And Trunks and Gohan both slide into view in perfect tandem and hit Broly with a double Masenko at the same time.
Yeah.
And that was really nice of, like, Trunks has done this before.
Yeah.
Like, this is Trunks falling back into an old pattern, and he can, even if Gohan doesn't know him that well, he can coordinate with Gohan because he's used to this.
Yeah.
And so I really liked that, and I wish in general we got more of Gohan and Trunks working together, because that was a really nice moment in isolation.
It was a really nice moment in isolation. Everything you're saying is nice moments, but I think the problem with me and why I couldn't connect to this fight is because I was waiting for it and distracted by waiting for it to follow the pattern of a Dragon Ball fight,
mm-hmm.
where they're going to get beat up, they're going to get beat up, they're going to be, or not even just a Dragon Ball fight, but how these fights go in stories. They're going to get beat up, they're going to get beat up, they're going to get beat up, and then something's going to shift and they're going to win. There is a value in stories of the try-fail cycle, of watching our heroes try and watching them fail and watching them try something new, and learning things about them and getting to root with them as they fail. Like, heroes don't always need to succeed. But when the stories follow a predictable enough pattern that I know I don't need to care about what happens until things shift,
mm-hmm.
and I know what's going to happen, my only question mark is what's going to fill in the Mad Libs blank of what is the verb of how they win this battle?
And the answer is changing the way Ki works for this one movie.
Sure. It's rough.
Yes, and, I understand.
And it is harder after my only other context of Broly being the 2018,
I think. Okay. The new movie.
Yeah, the 2018 movie. Because in that, they have the same situation where Broly's power is maximum. But because they're working more on the character side, they're trying more different tactics. They even break up the fight to have kind of the comic moment, but even more the character moment of Goku and Vegeta trying to fuse for the first time. All of that provides enough variation and provides enough texture and color that I wasn't distracted by the thing that's stripped bare here, which is just a fight that they can't win until they do.
Yeah, I understand. Like, from a writing perspective, everything you're saying is right. I just feel like visually it was an interesting fight to watch.
And that's totally fair.
Yeah, like watching Broly pummel on all of them was fun to look at, even if you're right, it wasn't good writing.
Oh, yeah.
I think my thing with this movie, and the reason why I can't say I dislike this movie, and why I think really stacking up against the Dragon Ball Z movies I've seen, it's probably still near the top, is because this movie had a lot of really interesting ideas. It didn't put them together in a very good way.
No.
But I really like what this movie could have been.
Okay.
And in some ways, the new Super Broly movie is that. But in some ways, there are some things that rightfully so, to simplify, the Super Broly got rid of. I think that the whole slave element felt a little bit out of place.
It definitely felt, wait, Broly as a slave, or the
slave race, the people, the little weird cabbage people who were the slaves of New Vegeta.
Yeah, let's just restate that once just to be perfectly clear. The people who were weird cabbage people before and then were enslaved by the Saiyans, because the Saiyans are horrible people who enslave other people, not because they are a slave race. Just to be clear.
In the context of the story, it is a race that are being used as slaves.
Yes.
Because I think there was a really, really interesting thing to dig into there that was not capitalized on at all.
But that's the key for the problems for me, is they bring up these interesting ideas and deal with them very badly, especially when you're dealing with an entire race that's been enslaved.
Yeah.
That's kind of heavy stuff that you need to know how to deal with, and if you're going to deal with it, you need to engage.
Yeah, and it was set up as like, oh, this is them discovering the cracks that are showing here. And, like, when everything all came out, Gohan and company did show up and be like, look, they're bad people. They're enslaving these people.
Yeah.
But at that point, Paragus was already just unveiling his, like, he was already fessed up to being a dick.
Yeah.
So I was like, yes, you found more evidence of the thing I already admitted. But I think it would have been a very different story, so I understand why they didn't do that. But I would love to see a version of this movie that tackled with Gohan understanding what the Saiyan legacy actually is.
That would be neat.
And seeing, like, oh my god, this is what they're doing, this is horrible, and then, like, going to Vegeta about it. I mean, like, Vegeta, these people are doing this, and Vegeta's like, yeah, that we're Saiyans, that's what we do. Mm-hmm. Especially because this is a point in Vegeta's character arc where he would not be apologetic about it.
No.
If this was, like, Super Era Vegeta, he would be like, yes, I know, we used to do that, and I'm ashamed. But this Vegeta would be like, yeah, and
yeah,
they could be making it more efficient this way, this way, and this way. Like, why are we giving them food? And so, like, that was interesting. There's so much.
There's a lot in this movie.
There's a lot of cool stuff in this movie that is executed to varying degrees of success.
And that's my problem, though. They did a lot of things instead of doing anything well.
I think the big thing that would have been an easy fix, and, like, it works when you view this in the context of the entire series, is that the end of Vegeta, like, you know, we make light of it, oh, haha, it's just the ending of Elf. But Vegeta, especially at this point in his arc,
yeah,
acknowledging, just because I can't do the thing doesn't mean you can't do the thing, Kakarot, and I am going to help you and, you know, completely submit to giving you all of the, just giving you the ball and letting you run with it, is a big move for Vegeta. But the two things are, since this is a standalone movie, we know it's not going to have an effect on his arc overall, and it works in the greater arc, in the greater context of Dragon Ball, but in this movie in particular, I would have liked just a little bit more at the beginning of the movie reminding the viewer exactly what the dynamics of Vegeta's Saiyan pride are.
Well, and even more than that, and actually, I think establishing Vegeta's Saiyan pride before they pop up out of nowhere would be incredibly important for putting into context that Paragus is a horrible person. But he's a horrible person who grows out of how Saiyans have always done things. He's a villain, but he's no more of a villain than Vegeta was when we met him.
Yeah.
And using that to see how far Vegeta has come, even if he's still kind of crappy at this point. But my problem with this is they don't even establish that arc well as an arc in this movie. Vegeta's up, he's down, he's in, he's out. He's hot, he's cold, Katy Perry's having a field day. Because when he comes into this movie, he's super cocky, wants to be the legendary Super Saiyan. Awesome. Then he realizes Broly, wants to beat Broly. Awesome. Then he realizes he can't beat them, and he sits sad out like a little puppy. Cool. Like, this is somewhere they could have worked harder to bring him to, so he doesn't just, like, suddenly take his ball and go home when he gets punched a few times.
Well, it's funny because as soon as Broly goes Super Saiyan, he's like, he can't be beat. And then Piccolo shows up and is like, Vegeta, quit it.
And then Vegeta quits it for a minute, and then he gets punched again. And then
he's punched once, he's like, no, he's a legendary Super Saiyan, I can't beat him.
But then he's up again, and then he's down again, and he's like, we're all defeated. And Goku's like, give me your power. He's like, no, I'm fine now, I'm gonna punch now. Oh, I'm punched out. Give me your power, okay. Like, this is not an arc.
No, it's not. Like, it almost is, yeah, but then it isn't.
It has a lot of potential, and if you, like, they did what you're talking about here, that would have been really cool.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't. And so I don't get that. Thank you for reminding me of another thing I didn't get in this movie. I hate it even more now. I have so many questions, Grant.
This did have the wonderful moment that is just one of my favorite out-of-context moments of Dragon Ball, though, when Gohan and Trunks jump in at the very beginning to help Goku, and Trunks goes Super Saiyan, and powers up so hard, he tears his jacket to shreds. That is the true Future Hunks transformation.
We got some good Future Hunks here. He looked pretty Future Hunky.
He was pretty Future Hunky in this movie. Anyway, you have many, many questions. Do your best to hit me. Paige wrote more notes for this movie than she did for anything we've done so far.
Two and a half pages. Hour and 15 minutes.
She has more notes on this movie than any other episode. I want that on the record.
Okay, so we've talked about this a few times. Let me lay this out here. At this point in the movie, Goku is alive.
Yes.
Gohan can go Super Saiyan.
Yes.
Trunks is a baby.
Yeah, baby Trunks and future Trunks are both present.
And Goku can use instant transmission.
Yes.
So, this roughly puts it in the training time before the androids appear.
No.
No, because Vegeta's there.
And because Gohan can go Super Saiyan.
So this would have to be the week of rest before Cell.
Yep, I was about to say, this is one of the few cases where there is technically a theoretical point the movie could have taken place. As opposed to, like, Cooler, which just didn't make sense.
Right, but at the same time, it still doesn't make sense because no one's really worried about Cell.
Yeah, nobody's worried about Cell, but yes, the only way this movie makes sense is if this happened in that week before the Cell games, all of the heroes of Earth decided, fuck it, let's go off to another planet for a little bit. And even then, actually, it doesn't make sense because it is established that for that entire week, Goku and Gohan never broke Super Saiyan.
For one thing, they never broke Super Saiyan. The other thing is that this is one of the few established times in the timeline where Chi-Chi is very supportive of Gohan training and not, like, slacking on his education.
That's also true, yes.
So it is possible that she said, oh, these Cell games are going to be over soon, and when we do, then Gohan really needs to pick up on his education. But that doesn't really seem to be happening here. It seems to be par for the course, Chi-Chi and Goku.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. There's no real logical time this movie could take place, but that's nothing new, because Cooler didn't make any sense in the timeline either.
No. Yeah, so these are, like, the movie going to jump around tonally a lot. Does Goku wear a gi under his suit?
At all times, obviously.
That's gotta, like, no wonder he's uncomfortable.
Yeah, no wonder
the
suit's uncomfortable, yeah.
Right. So, the legendary Super Saiyan was around 1,000 years ago.
Yes.
Broly is established to be 30 years old, because yes, he's the same age as Goku and they were born 30 years ago. So then, even after they discover that, they keep referring to him as the legendary Super Saiyan.
I don't think that he's literally... I don't think that the legendary Super Saiyan is literally the Super Saiyan that was seen 1,000 years ago. It's that the legendary Super Saiyan is going to be a Saiyan of immense power, and a Saiyan of that level of power was last seen 1,000 years ago. But there was a prophecy that that a Saiyan of that absurd level of power would return again, and that was what Frieza was afraid of, and that was why Frieza destroyed the planet.
So, the prophecy that caused Frieza to destroy the planet, kicking off the entire series, including Dragon Ball...
Yes.
...was a badly developed character they put in a side movie that doesn't even exist in the timeline?
That is why Broly is generally considered not to be canon. The legendary Super Saiyan... The idea, of course, is that there isn't actually just one legendary Super Saiyan in canon. But, you know, that same poetic justice still happens because Goku ended up being the first Super Saiyan to reemerge after 1,000 years.
Like Harry Potter.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know you already said this, but South shouldn't be able to exist in space.
No, it's silly.
Why can't anyone sense Broly's energy?
That's a great question, because, I mean, he's keeping it tamped down most of the time, and as soon as he does really go wild, Piccolo heads over.
Okay.
So, I guess they can. I mean, they do sense it once he goes Super Saiyan. They are like, holy shit, that's a lot of energy.
Yeah. Okay, so, two questions about Broly's hair.
Okay.
The first question is, Broly's hair, when he goes Super Saiyan, is green.
Yes.
Greenish, yellowish, pukish, snottish.
Yeah, it's a kind of a sickly greeny yellow.
A sickly green, either, like, if we want a more positive spin on it, it's a very Promare kind of shade.
It is kind of like, yeah, it's a similar to Leo's hair.
Why? Why is he not, like, blonde?
To make it look a little bit different, just to differentiate it, which then makes it cool because it's technically a different transformation. Legendary Super Saiyan being technically a different transformation from Super Saiyan makes a little bit of a different color. That's going to sell toys better.
Okay. Speaking of which, another hair color question, and I want you to let me get it out beforehand because I made a list.
Okay.
I realize that how we show hair can change the color a little bit, like that blue-black of Superman's hair, which is actually black, but it seems blue in certain lights. But what color is Broly's hair? Is it black, purple, blue, pinky blue, or blue?
Yes.
Like there's a dark blue and a light blue and a purpley blue and a pinky blue.
Yes.
One of those is maroon. Maroon is not the same as blue.
Yes. Yeah, the weird blue, Broly's weird blue form is a thing that some people lean into, and I think it was originally meant to just be a weird shading choice, because in a lot of the same scenes where Broly's hair comes off as being kind of blue, Goku's hair also in the shading ends up looking kind of like purplish.
Yeah.
Just because that's the way the lighting in that scene is. But a lot of other material has then run with it and just given Broly blue hair.
Right. But sometimes it is clearly magenta.
Yeah.
I mean, some of these, there's going to be no answer. How verbal is Broly? Why is he called a twig when he's super buff? But when Gohan is attacking Broly, as you said, he can't fight Cell. And part of it is because Gohan went through that watching of the fight with Goku, and Goku was like, hey, you can do everything I can do. But this still establishes, as you said, that Broly is probably stronger than Cell, possibly.
Possibly. His power is maximum.
His power is maximum.
But Cell is perfect.
But Cell is perfect. But it establishes at this point, Goku feels comfortable letting Gohan off against Cell, but not against Broly.
Yeah.
Why doesn't Goku just use that same trick of stealing everybody's ki to fight Cell?
There are a couple of answers. Your one question actually asked multiple questions, and there are a couple of answers. The whole Cell comparison, you just need to kick out the equation, because honestly, at the end of the day, all of the movies are just alternate universe, non-canon stories that take place in a vacuum. So Cell is not relevant to the story. He doesn't exist in the story. He's not relevant.
Okay.
The idea of Gohan having become a Super Saiyan specifically to train Cell is effectively not a fact in this movie.
Trunks is there on vacation.
Yeah, this happens in a weird bubble of non-time, where these are the action figures that we have stacked up for this fight, and so this is the way it's playing out.
Okay.
If as I said way back in the Namek saga, if Dragon Ball Z is just Akira Toriyama's D&D campaign, this is the holiday one-shot, where they just got whoever they could get together.
Gotcha.
So that answers that level of, let's just get Cell out of the equation. Now, as to why they don't do this whole sharing your energy trick other times, possibly including Goku fighting Cell, it's because that's not how ki works. Mm. It is generally considered to not be how ki works. This whole idea of share your energy with me is specifically how the spirit bomb works.
Yeah.
So if this movie had ended with Goku using the spirit bomb on Broly, then that would have worked. But you can't just and give somebody your power, or else, yeah, they would do that all the time. They would all just focus fire all of their power, give it all to Goku, and have Goku just one punch his way through everything.
Yeah.
But the people who wrote this movie weren't really thinking about it. They weren't actually keeping track of how the rules worked, and they made up this new thing that isn't actually how it works, that really only comes up in this movie. Because if you could just give people energy, Dende wouldn't have mattered. Because it's effectively healing, and yeah, so yeah, the answer is just that this is a one-off thing that actually doesn't make sense and is a continuity error.
Okay. It's past my bedtime and I'm sad now.
It's past your bedtime and you're sad now?
It's past my bedtime and I'm sad now.
I'm going to look really quickly at my notes here and see if there is anything else that I really wanted to talk about.
Goku doesn't own a book.
He doesn't own a book. What? Goku has no need for books.
Chi-Chi married a man who owns no books?
Do we have any... Amiyumi, look into it. Do we have any canonical confirmation that Goku can read? That's my task for you, Amiyumi.
His reason for being a villain is really that Goku cries too loud?
Yes. That is actually the fundamental duality of Broly, that he's so cool. Just visually and his whole thing. I mean, I'm sorry, Broly's cool.
No, he's not.
He's a big buff dude who can take on all of them at the same time and will like blow up your fucking planet for looking at you wrong. And his power is maximum and he smashes things.
Yeah, but the thing is, like, if I wanted to create a universe where there's one guy who can beat up all the other guys because he's the strongest, that's not hard to write.
No, but His outfit, like, his...
is not cool.
It's cool in a 90s way,
right?
No,
it's not.
He it taps into the 8-year-old in the 90s brain, right? And he's cool. He smashes shit, and his powers look cool. Like, he's got the cool force field thing.
Throws a good rave.
And, like, the thing where like, the whole world changes colors as it focuses in on his palm. Like, his powers are cool and everything. But at the same time, yes, he has the dumbest fucking origin ever.
That was Goku.
Who knows?
Was he a very intelligent baby?
Maybe. He's the dumbest fucking origin ever.
I did have one line in here that Broly says, "I just love a dramatic ending," before he pummels Goku again. I wrote, well, I guess we're both in for a disappointment. Like, this is not going to be a dramatic ending, Broly. It's just going to be bad.
And then, of course, one more question you didn't ask that there's no good answer to, but is worth asking. How did Paragus know Trunks' name?
You know, that's a fantastic question.
He just walks up and goes, "Well, Prince Trunks, I want you to come with us, too." And that's it. He just knows who Trunks is. Cool. How does he know Vegeta slept with an Earth woman? He just does and knows it's his name. Anyway, that is Broly the Legendary Super Saiyan now behind us.
Only 4 more to go.
Well, 3 more Broly movies.
Yeah, but four more bonus episodes that have already been unlocked to record.
Yes.
Which is why I'm almost afraid to tell people to give us more money, but give us more money.
But if Broly's power is maximum, we also want the Gohan and Rory Book Club Fund's earnings to be maximum. So if you enjoyed this and you want more things like it, again, good news, there are 4 more already funded on the way at the time of this recording.
We did not put the money amount high enough.
We tried to increase it and it still wasn't enough. So up on the plate next, we have, 8-Legged Freaks. Starring Logan from, co-starring Logan from Gilmore Girls.
I like how you corrected that, but didn't actually give his actual name.
Well, I can't pronounce it. And then we will have either BoJack Unbound or The Return of Cooler, not to be confused with Cooler's Revenge, whichever one gets more votes, which you should actually probably know that by the time this episode drops. And then after that, we will have The Pacifier, the Vin Diesel movie, which also stars Lauren Graham. I'm pretty sure she and Vin Diesel are going to put their faces together. And then we're going to do whichever one of those Dragon Ball movies we don't do. So, yeah.
As of recording, we are still $25 away from Amy Sherman-Palladino's follow-up to Gilmore Girls, Bunheads.
Which does have Kelly Bishop.
Which does have Kelly Bishop and dance!
Yay!
So
if you want to fund that or anything more, you can go to our WordPress and go to the Gohan and Rory Book Club Fund tab, where you can see what we're currently funding and how much we've currently raised. And you can go to the GoFundMe and give money to Room to Read, which is a charity that helps low-income students, especially young girls in developing countries, get access to education and literacy. It's an important cause that, you know, we really care about. We've been able to do some amazing work. I think our total impact has been something...
You've been able to do some amazing work.
Yeah. Our total impact has been something close to $1,500 in the, you know, year and change that we've been doing the book club fund now. And the other important thing to know is that we match every donation dollar for dollar. The GoFundMe goes straight to Room to Read, so we don't and can't touch the money, but we will pony up and give whatever you give. So, with that... Thank you all for listening so much, and we will see you next Saturday for our regularly scheduled program that I promise, Paige, will not involve any Broly whatsoever.
Yay!
Yay! So we'll see you then. Thanks for listening.